Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 299, recorded on June 18th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, and apparently half the country's on fire, so I need a spacesuit so I can breathe.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wait, half the country's on fire?
Well, from my perspective. It's like Arizona, southern Colorado, and now just outside Boulder.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Smoky air.
Well, it probably smells like campfire, so that's nice.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, okay, well.
Reminds you of camping.
There's always a bright side
maybe
to your steak burning down.
You can cook a hot dog. It's good times, maybe. Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Sitting on the floor.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say I'm not really doing that great because I lost my voice, but other than that, we're gonna soldier through.
No, you sound more grisly and serious, so that's good.
I sound like I've been smoking the pack a day for 20 years.
Yeah, people think
Now I know where the smoke's coming from. It's Adam.
Yeah, he's blowing it out of his never mind
out of his out of his yeah, you're right, I'll just stop.
Yeah. Okay, so WWDC happened.
Say that again.
Thank you. WWDC happened.
I stumble over that all the time. I made a joke the other day. It's like every time I say it, I sound like Elmer Fudd.
Wubby wubby.
Be very quiet. I am
Wubby WWDC.
Bugs.
Yeah, it's hard. Why is it so freaking hard to say?
Because it's W and then you have to say it again.
I think this is why a lot of people try and act hip, and they say, I'm going to dub-dub.
Dub-dub, yeah. Dub-dub-DC. So that happened it happened the whole week, right? But the big keynote was Monday, and they announced a bunch of software stuff. So
surprise, surprise.
I know. So the first thing that we're going to talk about, and I guess Jeff's cat is excited about, is tvOS.
Yeah, Nightshade, as soon as she knew we were talking about WWDC, she came out. She
has lots of opinions. That's nice.
Actually, I think she's pissed off that I had to shut off the air conditioner.
Aw. So single sign-on is one huge feature that they announced. And
are we talking about Apple TV now?
TVOS, yes.
Michael.
Cool.
I've never heard of single sign-on. What is that?
So I guess the idea is you have all these different video streaming apps on the Apple TV that require you to sign in with your cable provider. And it's really the same process over and over and over again, but you have to do it on a separate device. And so I'm not sure what the exact details of it are, if it only applies
do you want them?
So the basic is, you have some cable provider.
Take that as a no, Adam.
I'll ask for it in a moment. You have your cable provider. You sign in to one, you sign in once, and then all other apps that use that cable provider will utilize that login. So
right.
Now, Adam, correct me with everything.
No, I'm not going to correct you on anything. It's just there's really good hope that this will, at least in the U.S., get implemented pretty quickly, so you don't have to do that stupid frickin' code thing if you have cable service, right?
Yeah,
so just as you described.
Okay.
But the key is that Apple's actually working with Adobe on this. Adobe has these APIs called, it's part of their Adobe Primetime Authentication SDK. And those SDKs or that API is already in use by 95% of the broadcaster and cable network sites and apps for North America right now. So they're going to incorporate Apple single sign-on into that API. So everybody should have access to it relatively quickly. I mean, with the next API update, I'm sure there's some work in probably implementing it, but it that should make things, I think, go a lot smoother.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that, especially in the, in certain apps where for whatever reason, it seems like every week you go into the app and then it farts and says, I don't know what to do. You should probably sign out and sign back in.
But I mean, this only matters if you have cabled TV, which I don't have. So,
okay. I mean, I use that quite a bit for several apps on my Apple TV, so I'm very pleased about this.
You're sloughing off someone else's account.
I have a relative who pays for cable in my name. We'll just say that. We'll pretend that's what the case
is. That's so sweet. That's so generous.
And they watch it for me while I'm gone, while I'm not living in
that state.
Well,
it's because they want to make sure it's still there for when you're back.
Exactly. Yeah. Automatic app downloads, which didn't... I don't know how I feel about this. I assume you can turn it off. So the idea is when you download an app on your iPhone or iPad that has a corresponding tvOS app, it will just automatically appear on your home screen.
Yeah, same thing that we had for iOS devices and Macs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it should be okay. It should be beneficial.
Yeah, people want it, I won't turn it on because I'm really judicious about what I'm running on my Apple TV.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think it's one of those things where the discovery process is kind of screwy still for the Apple TV. So perhaps that will help you understand what's going on, mm-hmm. what apps have components for the TV and all of that. So I guess it's good for discovery.
You're not all gaga over dark mode. I thought that was going to be your thing.
I don't care.
You know, I thought
Ooh,
that
dark
I was
mode.
Yeah.
Dark mode everywhere.
Everybody's really just flipping out over dark mode, and yeah, I mean it's great. I'm happy. I think that the dark mode on the TV makes sense.
It does. Mm-hmm. It actually does make more sense.
It looks pretty good. I mean, Apple had the UI dark previously, so they're just going back. And that's good. Is that default or is it white by default? I guess we don't know.
I assume it's white by default.
That's my assumption too.
Yeah. But and people who
just like on your Mac.
People who don't care, it'll be white forever and they won't care. They will continue not caring. There's the new iOS remote app, which we were all promised. And so that has Siri capability in there, right?
All the Siri remote features.
All the Siri mm-hmm. remote features. So the swipiness.
Accelerometer for playing games.
Oh, yeah.
Plus keyboard input.
Keyboard.
Yeah, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Let's see. Siri was improved mm-hmm. in ways that I don't really know how to quantify other than...
Movies by topic. So being able to say, show me all high school movies from the 80s. And then
okay.
a bunch of... John Hughes films.
That was the one example that they gave, and so I don't really know how else I would use that. I guess there may be ways I could use that.
You could say, you know, show me all wilderness adventure movies.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
Well, how is that different from genre?
Or I guess surfing movies.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a genre. Surfing movies are not a genre.
Some people would
surfing
argue
surfing movies
with you on
could
that.
Be comedies or adventures or action,
documentaries
or documentary.
So, yeah.
Okay. So that.
Or show me all movies, you know, that take place in Hawaii.
That sounds nice. That. I'll watch that.
Yeah.
So.
Or show me all movies with women in bikinis.
Mm hmm. That's a category. Document. Thank you.
I don't know.
YouTube search.
Or men in Speedos, if you prefer that.
That would be. I don't know how Apple indexes these things. I don't know if it's like a manually curated or if they're using some kind of service, but if they can surface movies with men in Speedos, then that's pretty
significant. I don't know if any of these will work, but I mean, that's the idea, is that you'd have a general topic of film that you're interested in rather than a genre.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
I mean, the first movie that showed up when they said high school movies was Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and I keep meaning to watch that again, so maybe I'll use it to do that.
Ferris is such an awesome movie. It's, yeah. And, okay, here's one of the things I love about Ferris, because you brought it up, we're going down this path.
Okay.
When you watch it in high school, Ferris is the hero. When you watch it years later, when you're the grown up, he's the villain.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I wonder where I'll stand on that. I should watch it now to see where I am on the spectrum.
Did you know there's extra footage and extra color about why Cameron doesn't want to get out of bed?
In this movie? On where?
In Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
But where do you find this? This extra footage that you're talking about?
You can find out about it.
You read about it with words? Is that what you're saying?
Would you use the Googles?
Okay.
You would use the Googles.
All right, I'll use the Googles.
I'm just throwing that out there if you want to learn a little extra about, there's extra words, you know, when he sings the little song.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's whole extra phrases that didn't make the film.
Okay. So I'll, yes, I will look for that. They've also dropped the requirement for TVOS
Forgot
games.
Search YouTube. Search YouTube.
I said you search YouTube. You're not paying attention.
Didn't.
Yeah. You can now put out game controller only games.
Requirements.
Yeah. So they've dropped that requirement for TVOS games to be able to use the Siri remote, which is nice. And they considered doing that. I think that was a feature when they first announced the Apple TV. And then they dropped that, but I believe they either had something working or in the works, a mechanism to keep people from downloading those games or from even seeing them, really, unless they had the game controller. So,
I wonder if this will be what Lego needs to bring their games to Apple TV.
Pushes it towards more serious titles. Also, Replay Kit. Support for developers.
What's that?
So that's the ability to video capture your gameplay so that you can post it to like Twitch and YouTube games and stuff like that.
That sounds fun. That sounds really useful.
Yeah. Well, and also explains why you might want more storage on your Apple TV.
Yeah. There's another reason of the few. WatchOS. This one was very exciting to me, and under the category of I'll believe it when I see it, and they say that the biggest feature is that it's faster, like seven times faster for app launches, which really is the spot where we need faster.
Yeah.
If you dig into the APIs, you can kind of see why and how they're doing this. So I kind of believe it, because basically they're going to be caching a lot of stuff, and you can have developers can now background update data on certain intervals depending upon what their app is while it's sitting there in the background. So you're not going to have to wait for, you know, it to reconnect to your phone and do all this other stuff to get the data.
And I guess
that's really cool.
It's like keeping certain apps in memory.
Correct.
Yeah. So,
well, and it's, I mean, there's some tricks there, right? One thing is it's like a snapshot, but then you can also, the developer can behind that snapshot update the data and then get a new snapshot in the background. So while you're not looking at the watch, right? So imagine a weather app and, you know, they're updating every 5 minutes or something like that, the data and the snapshot.
Yeah. So that's cool.
So then when you go to, you know, when you go to access it, it comes up with that static shot, and then it will in the background again start to go out and update the data, but at least you're going to get an immediate, you know, feedback, and you're going to see something, and the data will have been updated within, you know, X amount of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and I can only imagine what it would be like having this new OS on whatever the new hardware will be too. Because, I mean, as we've said before, the biggest thing we want is speed. And I imagine that would be probably the easiest thing for them to add to a new device other than some new features.
Yeah, I don't think this has been a processor problem. I think this is, or a hardware problem. I think this has been an implementation problem. And what I'm excited about watchOS 3 is I think it addresses that issue. The fact that not everything has to be running off the phone and more things can be running locally and caching locally and accessing data locally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like definitely.
This. I like it too. So they got rid of the people circle thing.
Friends. Your friends are gone.
Yeah. Apple no more friends.
Killed your friends.
You know what? They must have, they have some kind of usage tracking.
Oh, they, no, yeah, they have usage tracking for everything.
They have usage tracking, and that's good.
Informal poll. Did you use it?
Okay, I was going to say a much more colorful word. No. Hell no. I never used that ever. Never, ever, 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 ever.
And I know we're going to get emails because I already did on Twitter, and I got some emails after I talked about this with the one person who said, yeah, I use that all the time.
I ran into someone just a few days ago, brand new Apple Watch user, and they were using it.
Right.
But it was interesting to see how they were using it. They were trying to equate their watch to being an iPhone on their wrist. Because they had been given the Apple Watch as a gift, and they weren't really grokking what it was.
Right.
And yeah, so to them, they had a mini iPhone on their wrist.
And really, when I queried this person who said they use it all the time, people are also confusing the friends circle thing with digital touch. And digital touch is not going away.
Right.
So when they said, oh, I use that all the time, what they really meant is I use that because I use that to get to digital touch and I like to use digital touch. You know, the drawings or the extra emojis or any whatever is in there.
Right. And so now that's just going to be part of messages in general.
Yeah, messages app.
And where it should have been in the first place.
Right. And it's now going to be expanded to iOS, which we'll talk about more later on. But yeah, so it's just going to, it seems like it's going to be something like the richer watch smileys, where they'll probably just be sent as gifts.
Yes.
Or, you know, perhaps not, because the digital touch is kind of, it's fleeting, right? It goes away. You just kind of see it once, and then it goes away.
So well, there's a couple features. When we get to messages, we can dig into it.
Okay. Let's see what else. So, yeah, so what replaced the friends is the dock now, which I believe is customizable. Is that correct? So you put whatever apps you want in there.
You can pin your favorite apps.
So now instead of favorite friends, you have favorite software.
Right.
And because software replaces real people.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah, it is. It's a really deep thing that you have to think about.
It also replaces glances, or glances and things in the dock are pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, what the hell? So what's the deal with glances? Because I use those. Are those gone?
No. I mean, basically the app running in the background is like a glance, so.
Right. I think we needed glances because it was a crutch for Apple so that they could show us some information quickly as opposed to making us wait for each app to load. Right. And now that they've addressed that issue, they don't need the crutch anymore.
So the dock interface for any app, the way I kind of picture it is the dock interface for any app is going to be basically that glance view. And then you'll tap into the app from there. But again, it'll be quicker because a lot of the stuff will be cached and running kind of in the background.
Well, what about... Well, okay, so I guess you got Control Center now. You swipe up for Control Center.
Right, which is basically just the settings glance now has its own thing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then will you get music controls in there as well? Because I use the music controls quite a bit.
Well, I would assume you would favorite the music app and then...
That's not what I want. I want music controls. Because music controls don't just control the music app. They control whatever audio app is playing. So I run Instacast still. And I use that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not clear.
It's not.
If they're doing it like on iOS, then it would be, you're right, it would be under the Control Center and probably a swipe over after you've brought up Control Center.
Probably.
Yeah. SOS. So that's a new thing.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Allison Sheridan and I were talking about it on Mac Roundtable, and she was like, no one's going to do this. This is stupid. No one's going to remember this. But I think there's a higher likelihood people remember if I mash this one button, someone's going to help me, as opposed to what we have to do now, which is you have to remember to do the swipe thing. And when you play with Apple's emergency features in a non-emergency situation, you're like, oh yeah, this is easy. But what I have seen, because I stop at car wrecks and stuff all the time because that's what I do. And
that's very nice of you.
Yeah, well, you know, people need help, so I help. And also, I'm like the only person that will remember how to use a smartphone or a cell phone in general in any of those situations where I've stopped. Because once you go out of normal mode into crisis mode, people's brains shut off.
Hmm.
And they cannot use the cell phone that they're on practically every waking moment of the day. They can't use it. They have no idea how to make something happen. They can't call 911. They can't do anything.
That sounds insane to me.
But trust me, this is exactly what happens. People go into the very basic fight or flight mode, and all of that higher cognitive stuff about here's how you use a phone, it's just gone.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to be... You're probably not going to actually use it in those situations, though. But
no, but knowing that people that otherwise won't be able to effectively use their phone will now have a way to get assistance.
And I think that this is one of those. There are many scenarios that we don't think about, right? So we think about, oh, you're in a bicycle wreck or you crash your car or something like that. But there are other personal safety issues as well that. Being able to perhaps be discreet about it.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what, I mean, it uses Wi-Fi, it uses your phone, whatever it can do to do this sort of thing.
Yes.
Can I ask what the gesture is? Because that wasn't really clear to me. To me, it looked like it was, you have to mash the
long side button.
Yeah, you mash the dock button.
It's the long side button. Just keep holding it in until it does its thing.
Okay, so you don't have to, because it looked like it still brought up
the shutdown
screen, and then it looked like it was a slide to activate SOS. Is that not the case?
You just press and hold, and after another moment after it comes up, it will do a countdown, and that little slider slides itself in a countdown. Yeah. So that's how it works.
But you have to hold the button down longer.
Just hold the button, keep holding it, and then it'll
go. If it starts counting down and you let go, I would assume it cancels.
Correct.
The count. Okay, cool.
Yeah. They've changed the way that you reply to messages now, which is awesome. They got rid of a step. I love that. So now you don't have to hit reply or dismiss, because let's face it, nobody, at least I never pressed the dismiss button. If I truly wanted to dismiss something, I would just flick it down. And having another button press is a bummer. So now you just press, you press the, emoji response, you scroll down for the, automatic
responses,
and or you could press the button for the microphone. And there's a new thing called Scribble, so you can press the you can press the Scribble button, and you can just, if you don't want to type out your, well, if you don't want to speak,
dictate
your response, you can actually draw the letters on the screen. And it looks like
everybody's really excited about this. I'm curious to see how useful it really is.
I bet it's going to be useful.
It's. I'm torn. I want it to be very useful, but the places where I'm most likely to use it, I think, are places where it would be awkward to use.
Yeah,
I'm walking down the street, or I'm driving in my car.
Kind of feel like I just want to pull my phone out of my pocket and type out a message.
Yeah. I could see doing this if I'm in a situation where I really have a strong compulsion to get a message out where I have to write the message as opposed to dictate it to my watch. And it's just not reasonable to get my iPhone out of wherever it is.
I think we just need to stop feeling embarrassed about shouting at your wrist as you're walking down the street.
Oh, I live in Boulder. People don't even think about that. They just assume I'm homeless.
Yep. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I wish
so. Shouting at my wrist, not an issue.
Yeah. Let's see. Activity sharing. So they've improved some activity tracking stuff in there and made it so you can share your rings, right? And compete with people. You also get some new watch faces. There's no developer watch faces, but they've added complications, a few more complications to various watch faces. And there's a little thing in the settings app where you can set your watch faces manually. Changing watch faces now is just swiping. You don't have to do the force press anymore to do that. You just kind of swipe from off screen to on screen sort of deal, which seems like it would probably be easier. These all seem like improvements.
I'm assuming that you pick the faces that you want to have available to swipe through, right? It's not going to be like every face, and I've got to go through the whole list.
Couldn't tell you, but I would imagine so. Yeah. Oh, there's an option to disable screenshots, which is nice for quite a few people.
Oh, that'd be great. I am constantly accidentally hitting that for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem for me is that I'm always taking screenshots for other things, but just not on my watch. So when I go through my screenshots folder and I see all the stuff on my watch, I'm really thinking, like, is this something I meant to take or not? So it'll be nice to be able to just shut it off.
Yeah, it's a feature I almost never need.
Yeah. There's the Find My Friends app has finally made it to the Apple Watch, as well as Reminders, which I guess Apple Sherlocked Reminders apps, which I mean, I guess is fine because it should have been there. And they have a dedicated heart rate
app. They really Sherlocked Reminders apps, though.
No, they didn't.
Okay.
There's a lot better reminder apps than Apple's.
Fair enough.
Yeah. For apps like that, Apple does a really great job of giving people something they can use.
Basics, yeah.
The basics. And then leaving that open so that other developers can create more fleshed out tools or more focused tools.
More unique.
Or unique, yeah.
Like, I mean, be honest, it's not gonna change any of us who use OmniFocus. Like,
right.
I never use that on my watch. I wish I did, though. If you tap on Mickey or Minnie on the watch face, they'll read the time in their voices, I guess.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
It's 3 o'clock. Ha ha. Like that?
I would imagine so, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's actually a cool example of one of the new developer features. So developers are going to have more, I think, access to the speaker now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Which is cool. I just realized I did a Mickey Mouse impression, and whoever cuts that out of the episode and turns it into their ringtone, I salute you.
Just, it's always 3 o'clock.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. So macOS, it's now called macOS. And
Again.
Except it's spelled differently because it's right. A lowercase m, and they took the space out.
I'm glad they went with the lowercase m. There were a lot of early rumors that said they were going to do uppercase because, you know, Macintosh is a brand name. But I had already started writing it out exactly as they did it because that matches everything else.
Yep, it's fine. And so the next one's called Sierra, and there's some integration through the continuity features. So one neat one is auto unlock with your watch. So
I get to finally use it because I got a new Mac.
Awesome.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So now they use some fancy proximity things to figure out if it's actually you at the keyboard. So if you have your friend trying to take your computer and screw with it and you're across the room, I assume it won't open. It'll be neat to play with.
What do they call that thing? There's a name for that.
Don't touch my stuff.
Time of flight networking security.
Yeah.
Seriously.
There's
I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
How is that I've not heard this term before?
I think it was in the keynote.
Oh, I was busy writing during the keynote, so there's probably a lot of words I missed.
Yeah. Universal clipboard.
Yay.
Thank goodness.
Well, there goes PasteBot.
PasteBot never... PasteBot was so old, and they had.
I finally gave up on PasteBot.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't been using it either, but I mean, that's basically, it's PasteBot built in.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, so on one hand, I'm so excited for this feature, and on the other hand, I'm so nonplussed because it feels like we are congratulating Apple for giving us something that should have been there years ago.
Perhaps.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think it works with Apple TV too.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
That would be cool. That would be very cool. You can do Apple Pay in Safari on your Mac using authentication from your iPhone.
Or Apple Watch.
Oh, yeah? With your Apple Watch as well?
Yep.
Nice. Yep. Very nice. I like that. I guess we'll have to see. Probably Amazon doesn't do that. It'll be interesting to see how often I use it.
Stripe is adding support for it, though, so that's all going to be a lot of smaller websites.
Cool.
We'll get that support through Stripe.
And there's some kind of iCloud Drive thingy that will let you see your desktop on your iPhone and stuff. What's the deal
with
that?
And your documents folder. I think by default now, desktop and documents folder are going to be included as part of iCloud Drive.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a great way to eat up space. Very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm wondering if...
And sell more iCloud storage.
Yep. So I have the 200 gig storage option on iCloud.
Nice.
And now I'm wondering, do I need to up that? One thing about the desktop that a lot of people are misinterpreting, I have seen, it's not a visual representation of your desktop on your iPhone. It is your desktop folder. So you get to see all of the documents and other directories that you have sitting on your desktop. You're not literally looking at your desktop.
Oh, yeah.
Between Macs, you are going to sync the desktop, right? So if you're a clutter person, every Mac gets to share the same clutter.
More clutter.
But it will be consistent clutter because you'll have the same clutter in all places.
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
But I mean, on the storage side of things too, Michael, I mean, iCloud Drive is only a minor part of the storage. The other feature is optimized storage. Talk about taking up all your iCloud storage space.
Oh, yeah. So it looks at old files and says, I can put that in the cloud for you and delete it from your computer.
Right.
Yeah.
This sounds like a scary feature to me.
Yeah, I think this will be a feature that really drives home the importance of good backups and making sure that they actually work.
Well, that's my problem is, I mean, what happens to my backups, like Time Machine and stuff like that, if my Mac is taking stuff, putting it in the cloud, and then deleting it from my local
storage? I'm sure they have
storage.
That.
Now my only copy is going to be the version that Apple has up in iCloud?
I don't think they're actually... So for one, I think those files that they put in the cloud, they will be in the same spot. They'll just have some kind of indication that they're not local. And I think that Time Machine will reflect
local,
that.
I can't back them up locally.
But I believe because they're old files, again, they will already have been on your Time Machine. I think
and
they have this
And they will
out.
Fall off your Time Machine because Time Machine, by its very nature, is a transient... backup system.
Now, I got to see how it works. I mean, I'm sure they've thought of many of these things. Mm-hmm. I know for one thing, there is a pretty good configuration screen, so it looks like you can totally custom configure it. The other thing is a lot of the files that they mentioned being backed up and removed are ones most people don't need and don't even know about. So things like cache files, inactive downloads, your iPhone update downloads, error logs, redundant mail data, older trashed files. This one, that's one that will be a problem for people. After 30 days, it'll like upload and remove like files that you've left in your trash. And I know that some people like use the trash folder as their like as like a storage location. It's really weird.
That is weird.
I've never understood that, but
that's a really bad idea.
Well, I've been on people's computers and you look in their trash and they have like, you know, 300 files in their trash going back for like five years.
And they're like, no, don't empty my trash.
Right. Don't empty my trash.
Yeah. And usually it's too late because when I take someone's computer and I'm helping them with something, I see that there's stuff in their trash and I just trash everything immediately.
Just don't even tell them. Just do it.
I just do it as it's a habit. It's just kind of a little tick that I do. I see that there's trash in there and I trash.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Well, good for you.
Wait till you're married. You'll stop that habit on your spouse's computer, I guarantee you.
Oh, I probably shouldn't ever touch my spouse's computer because I'll just do something that they don't want.
Yep.
Yeah, but you're going to be the tech support, so you're not going to have a choice.
Yeah. Okay.
The good thing, last thing on optimized storage, though, I think this is another feature that Apple put in to deal with the fact that we're getting smaller and smaller hard drives on our Macs because of the move to SSD from spinning drives. So, you know, all those 128, 256 gigabyte machines out there need this kind of thing because the drives are filling up.
Yep. Yeah, just don't store as much stuff.
Oh, there you go. That's
get over
that's
it, people. Or you don't put need it open.
I mean, this is Apple's solution for the average user, though. They're going to put all this stuff up in the cloud for them. I don't like it as an advanced user because I like more control. But as long as it can be configured, that's fine.
But you think about it. Most people...
Most people don't do backups at all.
For my
computer this last week, and I kid you not, I was at the Genius Bar. It was packed. There were probably 10 people up there. And they were going down the line, and I could hear the Genius asking everybody... because their machines were going in for service. Do you have backup? No, no, no. I was the only one, like, you know, it seemed like a dentist gum ad, you know.
One out of ten.
Yeah, 1 out of 10 people do backups.
Yeah, so. They were probably very happy about you coming in. Oh, you have a backup?
Yeah. I'm such a nerd. I had completely... wiped and restored the machine to just, it was factory when I brought it into them. Because I wanted no question that it was a hardware issue.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, there's a brand new clean operating system. No, nothing is on this drive, but like as it is out of the box, I even put back the original memory and everything. It's like, this thing is like factory spec. So nice. you can't tell me nothing's, you know, this is... Have you tried reinstalling the operating? Yes, I've reinstalled the operating. Have you? Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep,
okay.
What about, yep. And also, yep, did that end up, yep.
Yeah, well, we've got to get to iOS itself, but first I'd like to talk about our wonderful sponsor, Atlassian, because today it seems that anything is possible, and if you can dream it, a team of great people can build it. So how do you go about bringing everyone together to create what's next? Team up with Atlassian, makers of collaboration software that lets teams work and communicate better together. With their suite of collaboration software, you can assign, track, and manage tasks for any project, no matter how complex. That's the clarity of Jira. Create and share content, organize results, and bring team members up to speed. That's the flexibility of Confluence. Instant message or video chat with your team from any device. That's the freedom of HipChat. Test, review, and manage code in real time. And that's the power of Bitbucket. And the cool thing about Atlassian is that I actually had a chance to use Jira last summer. That's because NASA actually uses many of Atlassian's products to build software that do some seriously cool things. While I was there, I used Jira to help keep track of issues while I was working at JPL, and overall, it helped everyone on the team be more productive and get software out the door more quickly. So, visit Atlassian.com and see how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. Atlassian, helping teams everywhere team up to create what's next. That's ATLASSIAN.com. Check them out. They're great. All right, so let's talk about iOS because there's a lot of stuff. They had 10.
Biggest update ever.
Yeah, biggest update ever. iOS 10, of course. So the first big deal is the new lock screen, which now has Raise to Activate, which is one of those features that when I got my Apple Watch, I was doing to my phone, and it obviously wasn't working because it wasn't a thing. And now it is a thing.
It solves the Touch ID problem that I have still not been able to get past. You think after, you know, what, 8-9 months, I would have learned to use the sleep-wake button, but...
Nope. Same here.
Yeah, so... And so you're saying that by touching the home button at all, basically...
Blows past all my notifications. So my phone will buzz, I'll grab it to, like, look at the notification, and I hit the home button to wake it up, and... Now
your notification is gone.
Yeah.
Don't you have an Apple Watch?
I do. No, you know what? Notifications on my Apple Watch, to be honest, have been very not inconsistent. I do not get every notification on my Apple Watch that I get on my phone.
Well, that's your fault.
And that's probably some of the settings.
Yeah, you set that up that way.
But... Yeah. I mean, some of that's on purpose. There's some notifications, though, like messages, where it won't show up on my watch, but it shows up on my phone.
That's really weird. I 100% always get my messages on my watch. So, but regardless, so there are...
That problem's gone now.
That fixes that for people who have the ultra-fast Touch ID. And I believe... So what's the new mechanism now for... Mm-hmm. For unlocking your phone, how does that work? So you raise.
You have to press the home button.
So you just press it.
So as opposed to just touching it, you now have to press it.
Okay, so you raise it up and then you press the button, and you have to have Touch ID. And if you don't have Touch ID, then you have to type in your passcode. And if you don't have a passcode, then I imagine there's some other fallback method because you can't just have
it unlocked. You press the home button. Pressing that because swipe to unlock is dead, gone.
Is that because... Yeah. So what happens if you just press the home button and it's sitting on a table? Is it just going to show you the home screen? Or
no, it's going to go to the springboard or whatever.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the whole idea with slide to unlock was to keep it from butt dialing, right? Or butt unlocking. We'll have to see.
I think it was just a cool gesture, but...
No, it was definitely to keep you from... It was most definitely to keep you from unlocking your phone, opening the screen in your pocket. Mm-hmm. So they must have something to keep that from happening, I'm sure.
I thought it had an ambient light sensor, so it wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, and keep in mind, Michael, if your phone is in your pocket and you sit on it and you press the home button... Unless you are going commando and you have pressed the button against your butt to do a Touch ID setup.
Yes, which I do.
I think otherwise it's not going to butt dial.
Okay.
Most butt dialing scenarios happen when someone's been using the device, they go to put it in their pocket and they accidentally hit the call button as they're putting it away or something like that.
Fair enough. So there are interactive / rich notifications now. So the notification bubbles are more bubbly, and you can do 3D touch on them to see more information, get a little bit more detail, and actually interact with them. So if you have an incoming message, you can 3D touch on that, get context, right? I think you can scroll back through some history in there, perhaps all of it. That you would normally see in the Messages app, as well as reply and just kind of take place in a conversation, a more full-fledged conversation right from the lock screen without having to go to the app. And similar things with weather and, well, not weather, but other types of notifications. But the, so in addition to the slide to unlock going away, they've now changed the whole lock screen so that you have little pagination dots at the bottom so that you have your primary lock screen. If you slide from left to right, you get to a, I guess, Notification Center widget screen.
It's the widget screen. So basically all your today widgets are over to the left.
Widgets. And then there's a little camera icon to the right. Yeah. So you push over there to get to the camera.
From right to get the camera.
Correct. And
which is awesome.
It does seem awesome because the before you had just that one little target to get to, right?
Now, well, and I would never swipe up high enough.
Really?
I'd have to do it two or three.
You must have.
I was just trying
fingers.
To quickly open it and flick it up, but
yeah, I always have to flick like three times.
Yeah,
never had a problem, but okay. So it's. I'm guessing it's
new method. That's the point. This new way is better, and it borrows a lot of these things are borrowing from Android, which is funny to me. Like Apple tried to do their own thing for a long time, and they finally just realized, oh, we got to do proper widgets. We got to do. You know, swipe over to get to the camera.
Yeah, so the widgets have been pretty significantly tweaked, right? So now you've got, I think there are widgets for almost every stock app, and they basically give you a glance at the actual app. So you can, you have a little preview of stuff. So it's just a pretty narrow bar for the weather, for example. But if you 3D touch on that, it will expand out and let you get forecast and that sort of thing.
Here's an overarching theme that since I've been sort of processing everything that's happened at WWDC, that I think I talked about this on the Mac show, and I think developers don't see this coming yet, but it's very obvious when you step back and you look at all the things that Apple has done in terms of even opening up the APIs to developers. Apple is de-emphasizing the app moving forward. And I think it's for a number of reasons. I think voice control coming forward is one of those reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think another reason, so apps are really becoming more and more, instead of apps, quote unquote, they're becoming services to the operating system. And it's democratizing apps as well. Like all of the data in those interfaces, when you take them out of the app, become the same. So things like VoIP calling being integrated at the same level as the phone. Well, every VoIP app now sort of works the same at that level. It's just a matter of, okay, which one do you want to use? Do you want to use Skype or Slack or, you know, and insert the name of VoIP app here, or do you want to use the phone? They all end up being the same. So widgets are in the same way, kind of like this, you're having a lot more access to app functionality at a lock screen, at a home screen level, and actually opening up and using the app is going to become less and less, not only important, but done less and less by a lot of people because of a lot of these features. And that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, how important do apps become? Or are you just kind of selling the services of your app? And what does that mean?
In a way, almost feels like the data soup concept from the Newton message pad, where you have the data or the service, but then you can create whatever the app is that lays on top of that. So right. So it's not a matter of having all this customized content. It's a matter of getting the right customized interface to access the content the way you want.
Right. So like, for example, like when I can 3D touch on, say, the Netflix icon and do a search for the thing I want to watch on Netflix right there in 3D touch, and then get a preview right in the 3D touch, and then launch and open and start watching the show immediately, what have I really done inside the app? Nothing. I'm watching the show inside the app, but at that point, it's at full screen. So I've done zero interaction with the actual Netflix UI. And those are the kinds of things that are going to be possible. And that's sort of interesting to me.
It is interesting. And it seems like it would be just more streamlined and easier to deal with.
Well, and it makes a lot more sense in a world where voice is the entire interface, right?
Yeah.
With voice interfaces, mm-hmm. There is no app interface to work with. So I think you kind of see this as being a step toward that direction. Sort of Apple saying, here is, you know, ways to interact with the operating system and your app where the app UI is really non-essential anymore.
Fascinating. I like that. I think that that is definitely something they're doing. Siri API, so they've opened up Siri to some extent. I'm not really sure. Do you guys know?
I can tell you the full extent.
Thank you. Let's do that.
You want to know? Yeah, so the way Siri is working right now with apps is there's two concepts you have to kind of understand. You have to understand domains and intents. And domains are basically the areas where Apple has allowed developers, or the sort of categories of apps that Apple has allowed developers to use Siri integration with. And then within that, each one of those things has what Apple calls intents, which is basically the developer saying, okay, within this, this is the kinds of functionality that I can use. So for example, messaging. So messaging is one of those domain categories. So messaging apps can interact with Siri. And then within that, there's a whole sequence of intents. So things like reading back a message or replying to a message, or, you know, so they have very specific controls and points where they can access within messaging. And so the domains that are opened up in this first in iOS 10 are what Apple calls ride booking. So you can think of Uber and Lyft, messaging, photo search. I don't know if I fully understand that one, but basically some access to photos in terms of being able to search and find, I think, photo images. Payments, which would include things like Apple Pay, audio and video calling, workouts, and then climate controls and radio for CarPlay.
Okay.
And that's it right now. That's what's opened up. And then within each one of those domains, of course, there's different kinds of intents or things that developers can do.
Interesting.
Wow, that was a way better description than what I was going to give. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I wonder how often I will be using that sort of thing.
All the time. Again, all the time. Because imagine being able to, you know, you can make a phone call now using Siri from the lock screen via Skype or some other thing. Or if you're a WeChat or a Snapchat user or a Facebook Messages user, you can do all your messaging through Siri voice with those with those apps.
Yeah.
Or you want to book a Lyft or an Uber, you can now do that from your voice, or, you know, insert another car service here. So those are all opened up to these categories. Or workouts. So if you're a Strava user or a Runkeeper user, or you'll be able to control all your workouts from your voice, which is going to be very convenient if you, you know, run with Bluetooth headphones. I think that's something you do. So you can start and stop your workouts, control different things within that, all using your voice.
Yeah. Another great feature that a lot of people have been looking for is the ability to remove stock apps.
Yep.
Yes. And although they're not really removed, they're removed-ish.
I think they're hidden, but it does mean that if you say remove the calendar app and then you tell Siri to put a new event in your calendar, she'll be like, I don't know what that is. Even if you have
I
think that still works.
No, it doesn't.
Are you sure?
I've seen examples of this. And it says, you don't have that app, but you can download it from the App Store. And she presents
hopefully
you with a link.
Hopefully this will change before the beta period wraps up.
I'm guessing there will be some tweaks to this process.
Because I would think the underlying calendar functionality should still exist. Like, you should still be able to add something to your iCloud calendar. And if I'm using Fantastical, that data still should be able to go in there.
Is it only
if there's no calendar app at all existing on your device? Or
I'm guessing that even if you have Fantastical on there in the beta, you'll probably be presented with something like this. But once developers update their stuff to support the new whatever calendar API, I'm sure it'll be something where she doesn't.
So let me give you another example. So you delete mail.
Yeah.
There are still a ton of Apple's apps that in the share sheet can send data through mail. And I cannot imagine that that breaks. That the underlying mail engine still exists. You're not going to be able to open up the mail application per se and see that data. But it's my understanding that that's the difference is, yes, these apps are hidden, but the core services and functionality aren't being removed because those are baked into iOS. They're not, you know, mail is just, the mail app itself is just an interface to the underlying mail engine. Same way as the calendar app is just an interface to the underlying calendar engine. And calendar and mail and messages and phone and all these things are built in to the operating system. And you can't just remove those things.
I could always see them opening the quote unquote mail share sheet or the mail sheet to developers so that developers who like Readle, who do Spark, it'd be nice if you could
but they
just
don't write
use the native
mail, they
Spark.
Don't write the underlying mail engine. Again, they're tapping into the mail data that's coming in central to the the operating system.
We'll have to see, I guess.
Yeah.
New keyboard with deep learning, so it does a lot of fancy things that I only barely understand, such as intelligent suggestions.
Yeah, the fact that Apple said deep learning, or more accurately, Air Force One said deep learning.
Yes.
That, I think, was a really big yet subtle bomb that Apple dropped in everyone's lap. Because if they're seriously getting into deep learning and real artificial intelligence.
Oh, you know they are.
They've already been into this for a while. I mean, how many companies have they acquired in the past couple of years related to this? It's like dozens.
Right. But now they're actually openly saying what they're doing.
Ultra deep learning.
And this should really be of concern to a lot of companies. Because if Apple gets really serious about a technology like this, put on your seatbelt and goggles because it's going to get crazy.
Okay. You can do a lot of cool things from the keyboard, like sharing your current location very easily. You can share contact information very quickly. There's intelligent scheduling for calendar notification. When you're perhaps in a message conversation, when you see those data detectors, it will pull the data detectors a lot more accurately to set up that appointment for you without as many steps, which is nice. It uses calendar availability in some way. I'm not really sure how that works. Recent addresses, lookup, and multilingual typing. Multilingual typing is definitely something that people, I'm sure, we'll use. Anything else to say about the new keyboard outside messages?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Nope.
Photos app, I love the two changes they made. So first, they've exposed the big map where you take all your photos. So it's a Places tab, which is very nice. I always want to be like, oh, I don't know when I took this photo, but I know I took it in this place, and if I only had that darn map, I could find it for you very quickly. So now they have that map.
You know that's in there now, but it's just really annoying how it's accessed.
That's what I'm saying. It's now exposed and you can find it easily. I can never figure out how to get to it.
Are they gonna I just hope they fix the other part where now I can actually tap on in a collection the title and not see a freaking map.
Oh.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So you can do what now?
You know, currently in Photos, if you tap on... So if you're looking at your collection...
What's that? My collection.
that's the main view in Photos.
Oh, collections? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know that if you're in a collection and you tap on the title, it takes you to the Stupid Places map, and it drives me nuts because I'm always freaking clicking on the title by accident because I don't think about tapping on a photo thumbnail because that's not the photo I'm looking for. So it's like I want to go into that collection, but if you tap on the title, it takes you to the Stupid Map view. You got to tap on a photo in the collection to drill in.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm hoping because there's now a proper Places that I can actually click on the title and get to the Stupid regular, you know, the next view down rather mm-hmm. than, it never made sense to me that tapping on the title would take you to a map. So like if I'm at the highest level and I click on 2015, I get a map with all the photos that I've taken throughout 2015 pasted on the map. It's like, no, I want to go in and see all the photos from 2015, not the freaking map.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's annoying.
So I hope this fixes that. I'm assuming it will.
Yeah. So the other really cool big feature, I should say
two.
There are two other big features. So there's computer vision now. Again, I think that goes back to the deep learning stuff. So now you can just search for the actual content of your photos without having to do any tagging. It doesn't necessarily need geolocation. So if you took a photo of a bridge, you can just type bridge, or if there is a bridge in there, or
bicycle, or bicycle, cat, or
yeah,
dog.
All these kinds of things. Yeah, it's very cool.
Desert, mountains, forest.
Picks out people. Mm-hmm. It somehow can, I think you have to identify who the people are, but it does that thing that Apple's been doing for years in photos.
Face recognition.
And you also have this new auto video thing in a tab called Memories.
Yeah, so it uses the facial recognition and the object and scene recognition to automatically group photos together as what they're calling memories.
Photos and video.
So right,
now
yeah.
It lumps all that stuff together.
Yeah. I mean, all the stuff that you... Yeah.
And makes a video for you, a nice little presentation of events. And you can... It does it automatically, but you can tweak like the mood and the type of music and that sort of thing. So it looks very cool. It's one of those things that... You know, the only other thing that I would like is if they had some kind of recognition that I took the same photo 20 times or whatever, and just pick the best one and then let me trash the rest because, you know.
Yeah, the trick's going to be how is it going to know the best one?
Well, I think Google's had this for a while in Picasa.
Well, but isn't that how Burst photos work?
But I'm not talking about burst photos. I'm talking about when I was hiking in Yosemite, I took like 30 pictures of Half Dome, and I only need like
the best
two
half
of them.
Dome picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, what else? So we're on photos. You got maps. It's all new. They took the search bar from the top and put it on the bottom.
Sweet.
Finally, a bigger one that wasn't announced that kind of came out afterwards is finally having the ability to edit raw photos. Shoot
and
edit raw photos.
Huh? Yeah, that's actually a big deal.
Wait, you can shoot in raw?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right now, it seems like it's only open for third-party developers. But they will have the capability to enable shooting and editing in RAW. It's not clear if Apple will build it into the Photos app.
Probably not.
But your third-party apps will be able to do it. So, I mean, this is a big deal for some of those really cool, higher-end third-party photo apps. It only works with the rear camera, which makes sense.
Yeah.
It can handle shooting RAW and JPEG at the same time. And it's going to be available to iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, SE, and the 9.7-inch iPad.
Nice.
So you need to have the newer camera sensor. And then for those who care, it's using Adobe's digital negative file format. So it's Adobe DNG.
Which is good.
Nice. I think beyond just swapping around the interface and maps, they have one big feature that I'm excited about is better navigation.
So yes,
the actual UI for navigation is so much nicer. Bigger text, bigger icons, more clearly represented icons. You've got
traffic. The route is living in Southern California.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a must-have feature. And I really hope they said it's going to suggest alternate routes better. I really hope that's the case because right now it sucks.
Yeah, where is Apple getting the alternate route data? Is it coming from Waze?
No, Google owns Waze.
It historically.
Okay.
Really?
But that explains why it sucks. I mean, Waze is alternate route data, at least for me, in Colorado has been so bad that I actually got disgusted with the Waze app that I actually deleted it halfway through routing me to a destination.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
I can't survive in SoCal without Waze. Apple Maps is stupid. There are just many, many times where Waze has taken me out off of a route where I would have been waiting for twice the time in traffic. And it's just like, get off, you dummy. Go this way.
Yeah, and see, here, Waze will routinely tell me to go exactly the opposite direction.
Okay, well,
from where I need to go. And it'll do stuff like tell me, hey, there's a bad traffic jam up ahead. Exit here. And so I exit, and then it would take me on – and I'm not exaggerating because this is the event where I deleted the app, a 3-mile loop where it took me back to the same exit that it got me off at and put me back on the highway and dropped me right back in the middle of the same traffic jam.
Oh, at least it tried. But that's ridiculous.
And then it died. It
was just Maps is another area, though, where it's open up to developers.
Yes.
And again, it's as I was talking about earlier, it's taking app functionality and putting it inside Maps, which means you're going to book rides or get restaurant reservations or access other location services, make payments, do tracking, mm-hmm. booking, all inside the Maps app.
Mm-hmm. The music app has been redesigned to have a bunch of large random text. And also lyrics for songs.
Now I have a question for you guys related to this. Is the search in the current music app now using the new UI, or was it always like that?
What do you mean?
So I did a search with music, just like a couple days ago, and when I got the search results, it looked like the screenshots that were in the demo, and I just don't remember it looking like that before.
Okay, well, I'm searching now, and nothing's happening, naturally.
Maybe not on iOS, but on the Mac.
Okay, I'm looking on my iPhone, and it looks the same.
Okay.
Yeah, no, sorry, I should have clarified. This is on the Mac.
Okay, so we're going to search for something.
But it may just be I never recognized what the UI for search looked like.
That looks, yeah, it looks standard. It looks normal. So, yeah, I don't think they've changed anything yet. But hopefully, I haven't really gotten a chance to play with the new music app. I hope that it is easier to understand in general. And, of course, I think that was their driving desire, but we'll have to see. There was a news update. So the news app has been updated to allow you to subscribe to magazines and newspapers. I don't know that there was much else in there, was there?
For the news app?
A tweaked layouts.
Yeah. Changes
featured
to layouts.
Stories, breaking news notifications.
Yeah, yeah. HomeKit.
And the subscription, yeah.
HomeKit has an app. It's the Home app.
Yeah, what happens to the Home app now?
What do you mean, what happens to it?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm using all the time.
Yeah, there's already a HomeKit app called Home.
I was under the impression that this was a new thing.
Okay, there's a third-party app called Home.
You're proving our point.
Home.
Okay, so now there's Apple's version, which probably works better. It has
Means the poor developer who made the Home app really got Sherlock.
They got paid a whole bunch of money and acquired by Apple, right?
No, I don't think so.
No, they didn't. Toggles in lock screen. Toggles in the lock screen for Home Kit
Control
stuff.
Center, yeah.
You've got your Apple Watch toggling, which is nice.
Interesting is the Control Center. We forgot to mention this earlier. So Control Center now has a panel interface. So you bring it up, you get first Control Center. You swipe over, you get the music controls. You swipe over again if you're using the Home app, and you'll get the Home app controls.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah. So you definitely get at least two panels now, which... Seems to be much better. So bigger buttons, which is always nice. Bigger buttons and clearer intents, I think.
Yeah. Another big thing that was kind of glossed over with HomeKit, and a lot of people didn't know this, is the camera and doorbell support. So prior to iOS 10, it doesn't support cameras yet.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so your security cameras and stuff will be supported.
And it's all routed through the Apple TV, which I believe has been the case for a while, correct?
Yes. Well, only for remote access.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So when you're out, when you're outside your home network, you access all everything through that, through an Apple TV.
Mm-hmm. The phone app has a slight update with voicemail transcriptions, which is very, very nice. I'm looking forward to that. There's the VoIP API, which I think we touched on.
Yeah, we kind of talked about earlier.
Yeah, so if you have, Skype or some other voice, VoIP app, developers can use this new API to basically make it look like any other phone call.
Yeah, what I like about this too is within contacts, you can assign VoIP apps to certain contacts and just say, okay, when Michael calls me, I want to get the call through Skype.
Huh.
That sort of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's like when you say Siri, call Michael, it'll use Skype instead of the phone app.
Oh, I see. I gotcha. Messages seems to have one of the biggest updates in iOS. So that presentation was terrible. The WWDC presentation was terrible, and it made me think that Messages was a huge mess because the presentation was a huge mess. And it's not as bad. So one really great thing, rich links. So if I send a map link or some web page link, you get a little preview right in the bubbles, and then you can 3D touch on it to get a better view and all of that. Accessing photos is much faster, so you just press the button and then you have access. It just kind of slides up. You get access to your camera roll right there. You can also tap on the camera itself. And so, again, eliminating a tap, which is always nice. They have embiggened emoji.
Yep.
So now when you type emoji, those are bigger. And I believe Kanye West invented this feature. Predictive emoji. I'm almost positive he tweeted that last year.
Yeah, cool. But he was probably in a chemical-induced stupor and has no idea.
Well, thank goodness. I don't necessarily want to give him credit for this, but it is a nice feature.
Tap to replace emoji on words because words are hard.
Well, yeah, so you type it out, you say, great job. Congratulations on graduating, and then you press the little emojify button, and it will highlight words that could be emojified, and so for words that are just like graduation.
Because words are hard.
Words are hard. People don't want to read those. I mean, it's much nicer to try and figure out those Egyptian hieroglyphics. So you tap on it, and it will replace it, or it will give you a little pop-up of suggested emojis, and then you can select which one you want. There are bubble effects.
Especially with the current education system. It just, you're graduated, but he might not understand the word.
Maybe this is just the circle of life, and we're looping back around to a point where we will document our spoken word through hieroglyphs.
Yeah, and just grunt a lot. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bubble effects. So now you can slam your bubbles. They'll slam down on the screen. You got magic. What do you call it? Invisible
transporter ink. Effect.
Invisible
where they beam in.
The which? What, Jeff?
I called it the transporter because they beam in, but it's invisible ink.
Right. Yeah. So it shows up.
This is the punk your friends with horrible images of the feature.
Yeah, that does sound fun. Actually, thank you for pointing that out. I will enjoy that very much.
A lot of people are referring it to it as the dick pic feature.
by the way, Michael, thanks for the pic earlier.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, so it just shows up as a blur and then you swipe
over. And it's not going to be a problem for, you know, in harassment cases at all.
No, of course not.
Well, you guys are nice. And then, yeah, there are a bunch of different feet effects for the bubbles. You can get whole screen effects. You can get this like disco pew-pew sort of effect.
Yeah. So you can add
confetti,
emotion to your...
Emotion.
You so can, people can understand, you know, because we can't understand anybody's intent with text, so...
No, you know, honestly, it is nice, especially...
No, I'm not joking.
Yeah, the for example, they've got the ability to like slash emote on a particular text, right? So you tap on it, and you can give a thumbs up, you can give a penguin or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they basically implemented every other feature from every other chat app into Messages,
which is kind of nice because you know what?
No, it's great. It's good.
I need to upvote people's. People's messages to me. It's one of those things where I would otherwise just send a thumbs up.
But I think it's fair to say, as many people have pointed out, that Apple has borrowed a lot of good functionality and features from other third-party chat apps.
Yeah,
that have been missing from Messages.
But a lot of this stuff, I think, it's important to point out that it seems as though it is implemented in a manner such that if you don't care about it, you're not going to be stumbling over it to make it happen.
Right.
It's just going to be working the normal way.
I like the handwritten
messages and digital touch, especially the ability to do digital touch over a photo. I think is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There is what was it? Oh, stickers. So developers can now. Apple included a couple of these apps, so you can do third-party apps within Messages.
There is now
payments. Which is nice, so you can send a payment right through in Square Cash.
Yeah, without ever opening the app.
But
it goes back to what I was talking about earlier. You have, you know, apps inside iMessages now. So there's an iMessage app store, and you can buy stickers and other third-party app functionality that's all going to work inside Apple's UI, Apple's messaging app. You're never going to go out. You're never going to launch the third-party app again.
Yeah,
which is awesome. I like it from a consumer standpoint. But again, I wonder if developers aren't really realizing what's going on here. Apple has done a really good job of sort of subtly sliding the stuff in.
You know, I've heard a lot of people like really flipping out and being so angry about this part, you know, third-party developers being able to create their own sticker or whatever packages that go into Messages. And they're just complaining that Apple just turned Messages into a payment platform. And no, they didn't. You don't have to buy any of these add-ons.
Okay. It needs to be a payment platform because like 90% of the people who have a smartphone, Messages is the whole reason they have a smartphone. I mean, that's all the only way they use it. For the most part, is
and Apple did say this is their single most used app.
Yeah. Yeah. So why not let customers do all of the things that they want to do with their phone right inside the Messages app? They never have to leave. I think it's brilliant.
I think it's really smart too.
Yeah.
And you're not committed to buying anything with the app.
No.
So it's okay. Just use what you want and it's all good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else in Messages?
No, just that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the Mac and the Apple Watch will be able to receive a lot of this new interactive content like the bubble effects and all this stuff, but they won't be able to create it. So this is a iOS in terms on the creation side only feature.
Oh, interesting. Good to know. Swift Playgrounds, it's a new app they announced, which is for iPad only, I believe. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that will... it's a way for people to learn how to code in Swift. And I think it's kind of targeted toward children. But I think it looks like you can go pretty advanced with it. It helps you learn how to code in general in a very story-like playground sort of environment. It looks very awesome, promising. Yeah.
Well, and you can take the Playgrounds from iOS into Playgrounds on Xcode, which Xcode has had Swift Playgrounds for the last couple versions, I think. Whenever they announced Swift, it was part of that. So, and I think there are some more advanced lessons and things that you can do with it. So I think you're right. I mean, it's very much geared at the beginner, but I think there will be some ways for developers to use this as a tool as well.
And I think that it's safe to say that even though Apple was promoting this as a beginner tool for kids, it's a beginner tool for anyone that wants to get into Swift coding.
Yeah, honestly, I would love to use this right now. But it's, is it even released for developers at this point?
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe I'll
when you install the beta, I think it's there by default.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely going to play with this because I do want to learn how to do Swift. So I'm looking forward to that. What else do we have? You can do individual read receipts in messages now, which thank goodness, because there are a few people I would like to send read receipts to, but not most people. There's a wake alarm thing in the clock app, although it's kind of a nice little interface for showing you how many hours of sleep you're getting, but people have said that it doesn't do sleep tracking.
Like no, it's a sleep pattern reminder, so you can now set
right.
bedtime and awake time, and it will remind you, hey, it's time to go to bed.
Yeah.
I am totally going to play with that.
I already do this and never follow it, of course, but it'll be interesting.
Again, it's not going to make you go to bed.
I want it to make me go to bed. I want it to yell at me and take away my phone.
That's in the iPhone 8. It'll give you like a little injection. When it's in your pocket, it'll be like, bedtime.
No, I want it to act like my mommy. I want to take away my phone.
It'll slip you a roofie.
Okay.
It's your roofie. I was thinking this is just another reason why you want to make sure that you treat your significant other well so that they stay with you and they can be that system that tells you that you have to go to bed.
Nah, technology's nicer.
Yeah, but, you know...
Siri doesn't complain that I forgot her birthday.
I'm most excited about being able to set brightness levels on the flashlight in Control Center.
Yeah, there's that. Music storage optimization, which again is just offloading to the cloud. You can choose how much storage you want saved by this feature, and how old the music has to be, how stale it is.
Yeah, it's going to Apple Music. All my music's just in the cloud. I don't store anything locally anymore.
Split view for Safari on the iPad, finally. So now if you tap and hold on a link, you can say open a new tab, or you can say open in split view, and then you get a whole new Safari window in split view.
Yeah. Which is great. The workaround I've done up to this point, keep a second web browser on my iPad.
Did we talk about
that? That supports split view, right?
Yeah. Or run Safari and like Chrome side by side.
Right. I'm just pointing out that not all third-party browsers, I don't think, support split view in iOS.
I believe you are correct.
Yeah, I remember Sidefari. I told you guys about this.
Right.
Yeah, so now they're Sherlocking Sidefari, which, whatever. What else do we have here? Dark mode seems to be buried in iOS 10. So developers have figured out a way. I don't understand how they do this, but they figured out.
That's why they're developers. Yeah, they're clever people.
In the simulator, they've managed to turn on dark mode for messages and Safari and App Store, a bunch of different apps. But I'm guessing that it's just not finished, and they decided not to announce it. What do you think? No, or coming, or?
Yeah, I think it's just left unannounced.
Just wasn't done, yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. It's not something that I want to do, because usually whenever I do it in iBooks, it hurts my eyes. But perhaps that's just reading.
Yeah. But, you know, if Apple starts going with OLED or AMOLED displays, a dark mode would be nice, because everywhere it's dark, that means there's no power.
Yes. That is definitely nice. So that may be a future iPhone feature. So beyond that, Netflix updated their app with picture-in-picture support finally for compatible iPads. Some people like that, Adam. And there,
I never use picture-in-picture. I mostly activate it by accident and then get annoyed.
Well, just turn it off.
Forget it, picture-in-picture.
Turn it off if you don't use it.
Can you turn it off at an OS level? Like, say, never use picture-in-picture?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
There you go. Tip of the day.
Oh, there you go.
So
tip of the day.
Did you guys did you guys see the leaked image, the alleged leaked image of the iPhone 7 with the touch sensitive home button?
Fake.
Yeah, did you see the ring thickness nowhere nearly matches in both of these photos?
Yeah, it is so fake.
So fake.
You know, I threw out the fact that the new gesture for unlocking a phone is press to unlock. Now, to me, says that thing is fake. But a lot of people point out, well, they could be using, 3D touch sensitive.
That's what I was thinking. If they have a non-physical button, then they could use 3D touch and perhaps save some room. And I don't know.
I don't think they can save any room.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, that's my Not thing. Is this isn't the on until they can like have it be a virtual on screen button that you press on, I don't see the point. If it's going to still take up the space at the bottom of the phone, it seems like it's cheaper and easier to use a physical button. And then some people argue, well, physical buttons can break. I've had zero buttons break on any of my iPhones. I know that they break and people have had them break. But like the rarity of that versus the cost, the additional cost of the technology, to me doesn't make sense. Until again, once you show me a version where it's working virtually on the screen and now I can have a bigger screen or a smaller phone because of it, then I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So this has been a long episode, so I think we can just skip our picks this week, unless you have something you really want to talk about. Did you have something, Adam?
Well, I was going to do my pick, and I was going to do a demo as of my pick as I was doing my pick.
All right, let's hear it.
So my pick is a cool app called, I think you pronounce it UMMO, U-M-M-O, I'm assuming.
Okay.
And what it is an app for analyzing your speech and your speech patterns that you can become a better speaker.
Thank goodness.
If you do a lot of presentations or a lot of speaking or maybe a podcast or something like that, you can use it to analyze your speech, and it will find like filler words. It will find your pace. It will look at the clarity of what you're speaking, and then it gives you a rating. So I actually started this as I started talking, doing this review, and we'll stop it and we'll see how well I did.
This sounds like it's going to be very embarrassing for me when I do it.
So in my little review, I got 87.61% clarity.
Nice.
I used 4 filler words. My pace was 151 words per minute, and it was 51 seconds. I had... it'll show you your pauses too and how long those pauses were. And then it gives you suggestions on how to improve. And it's not 100% accurate, and sometimes it misses things. But for example, in what I just said, I used the filler word like. One time I used the word actually, which is a problem word for me. And I often use that. And I had one during that.
Yeah, right at the very end.
Yeah. So I've actually kind of run some pod. It's a real-time thing. Unfortunately, you can't load in a recording.
Yeah, that would be.
But I set it up.
Could you hold it up to a speaker?
Well, yeah, I've done that with my podcasts, and it's pretty interesting. And again, it's not 100% accurate. It misses some words. And sometimes, like when I was using... when I was doing that review, I think I said the word like, but it was actually in context. But it does give you the text to speech or speech to text roundup too. And you'll notice it'll miss some words and it gets some words wrong. But then it does an overall word analysis. It'll show you all kind of the short words and stuff. So it's interesting. And I think it's free. And you can tap on dots. Like I said, you get a little graphs and all kinds of stuff. Let's I want to say it was free. It might have been $1.99.
It's $1.99.
$1.99.
All right, Jeff, did you have a pick you wanted to throw out there?
Sure. My pick was the Raspberry Pi kit that you guys told me about a couple weeks ago.
Boom. Nice.
I bought it, and it's a two-part pick because then I put Homebridge on it, and it's great. I now can control my Wemo switches through HomeKit because I have a Raspberry Pi running Homebridge. And
yeah, it's pretty
really,
awesome. Huh?
Really cool.
It's a little tricky to configure. You know, you got to get a little nerdy. You got to get a little terminally.
Yep. You have to go to the command line to make all this stuff work. And, but once it's done, it just works. And I'm running the Raspberry Pi headless. So it's just a little box plugged into a power outlet sitting on the shelf.
Me too.
And if I need to get into it to do anything, I just SSH in and do stuff from the command line.
What nice. Would you say the technical skill level is from command line? I was going to say like beginning, intermediate level.
Yeah, it's at the tail end of beginning and beginning end of intermediate. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's what I meant by beginning intermediate.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like just barely intermediate level. You know, your average, I think if you're really basic and you've never looked at the terminal before, it could be a little bit overwhelming.
Yes.
If you've done anything in the terminal at all in the past and aren't afraid of it, I think you could handle it.
Yeah. And once it's set up, it's just set up.
Right.
It just continues to work.
So nice.
Yeah. And then after that, the only time you would ever need to go in and touch it would be if you have new devices you're adding in that don't have HomeKit support, then you have to go in and from the command line, you can add in the plugin modules for those devices.
Or if you want to add additional functionality, like use the Raspberry Pi as an AirPlay speaker also or something else.
Right, right.
Cool. That's awesome. So I don't have a pick this week, so.
All right, skip it.
I'm skipping.
Well, I did a double pick, so it's almost like you had one.
Thank you. How much was your Pi kit?
The Pi kit was $68. And that included a Raspberry Pi 3, heat sinks for it, a case to put it in, a power supply, HDMI cable, and a 16 gig SD card with Raspbian pre-installed.
Awesome. That's a sweet deal. You got a full computer there.
Yeah, it was a whole computer.
Yeah, yeah, $68. All right, so with that, you can find the picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes, tell a friend, rate the show, all that stuff. You can send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. We get all of those emails, and if you guys send stuff that's particularly addressed to Jeff or Adam, then I forward that stuff along.
Oh, crud. I think we got some feedback this week.
Yeah.
Last week, didn't we?
Yep.
I was going to mention it. Sorry, whoever sent that, I forgot to mention it.
Was it good feedback?
I think it was, yeah.
Oh, the review?
Okay, then thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Check out our sponsor, Atlassian, at atlassian.com. They're great. They have a lot of cool tools. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And maybe we can hang out while I'm in SoCal.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I don't know. You're in San Diego and I'm
we'll make it happen.
LA. Maybe we'll make it happen. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations Podcast. Check that out. It's a daily weekday show. It's awesome. Check it out. And he's at Jay Gamet on the Twitters. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. I feel like every week is a virtual hug.
Oh. Nice. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show. An iPod.
Unity. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 no. Yuck, no. Yuck, yuck, no. No, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers. Yuck. Communicator.